Welcome everybody into the first Calling It episode of 2021, which means by default this has to be a good show, right? I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered by CLNS Media as always. NHL preview is how we are going to start this show because hockey season starts on Wednesday. We're recording this Friday, January 8th at the noon hour, so probably the last show we get in before hockey season starts. We've got to talk about the Bruins because they are a fascinating team this year. Here to help us do that, my colleague from 98.5, the Sports Hub. He covers the Bruins, among other sports, and does a damn good job of it. Matthew Dolliff, whose name I can now pronounce correctly after 2 years of getting it wrong. Matt, what's going on?
Good to hear from you, Barth. I'm usually the host when you and I do a podcast at the Sports Hub, so tables have turned. This will be interesting.
I hope I lived up to your, I know you are very casual with the open. I am not. So, you know, I hope that kind of lived up to your standards. But let's get right into it. As a colleague of ours likes to say, no time for pleasantries. Are the Bruins, so here's my question, because Chara leaves, right? But they're still holding on to Krejci, who's on a one-year deal. Rask, yeah, who's on a one-year deal. Older guys. Are the Bruins going for it, or are they a rebuilding team?
That's sort of my issue with Chara leaving, is that it's not about the money or even like the playing time or anything like that, or like who they're going to be giving playing time to. It's just, it feels like they're sort of half in and half out. And it, like Char said, that he's leaving because they said they want to commit to their younger defenseman, which was something that I was sort of on board with. I would say either Char needs to be the, I said like many times going into this offseason or the past offseason, that if Chara stays around, he's got to be third pairing, you know, penalty kill specialist type. He can't be on the first pairing anymore. He's just not that player anymore. So now they're finally going to say that we just want to see what these kids can do, because they've drafted so many left shot defensemen. And it doesn't look like some of them are going to pan out the way they hoped. But I mean, you're never going to find out as long as you have like a 42, 43 year old defenseman taking up 28 minutes a night and playing those roles. So I'm sort of honestly excited to see what they do with maybe like Jeremy Lauzon on the penalty kill and, you know, other guys stepping up, the younger guys that we haven't seen much of. But I don't think they're rebuilding. I think they're going for, they still expect to contend for the Stanley Cup as long as they have that top line. So they're definitely, it's the defense is sort of rebuilding on the fly as they continue to contend. And my concern with that is that it's sort of half in, half out, and they're not going to be quite good enough to contend for a cup, and they're going to just be stuck in that middle ground, so to speak.
You mentioned David Krejci contract here, Tuukka Rask last year of his contract. We saw Zdeno Chara part ways with the Bruins, not mutually, by the way, and go to the Capitals. So that core that we saw at the early part of last decade, it seems like it's starting to dwindle down. Do you expect this to be the last year with that core, with the Rask, you know, Krejci, Bergeron, Marchand type of group, and next year will be the year we move on? Is the window closing for that core?
I think the window's closing for probably Krejci and Rask. I mean, maybe Rask, they'll decide on like a 3-year extension or whatever Tuukka himself said the other day, to just, you know, play out his remaining years. He said he doesn't want to play anywhere else. So I don't know. It feels, I mean, for a lot of people, obviously, after what happened during the playoffs last year, that the window's already closed for them on Tuukka. So, I mean, that's a really interesting one, that he's, you know, still around and there's so many people wondering why. Krejci to me is a guy that I feel like they're going to do a similar thing that they did with Zdeno Chara. I'm just wondering why it hasn't happened already. And that's not really a disrespect to David Krejci. I'm just surprised that they've written out this entire contract and they've had other prospects that they've tried to bring up through the pipeline at center. And I look at a guy like Jack Stanika, who Don Sweeney said, I think it was Don Sweeney said recently during camp, that like, yeah, we know he's a natural center, but he's probably going to start out on the wing for us. It was either Bruce Cassidy or John Sweeney that said that. And I think that's the only place where he fits, because you have Bergeron and Krejci just entrenched there. And I think if Stanika pops this year and he shows you that he can be, you know, a dynamic like top six kind of forward, then I think you have your number two center moving forward. And so I think it would make it hard for Krejci to stick around. And I don't think David Krejci's old enough where he's going to say, I'm just going to call it quits, unless, I mean, I don't know. But I think we could be looking at David Krejci's last year for sure. Tuukka, I mean, they don't have another like surefire option coming up as they might have at center. So I don't know. I don't think the window is going to close too quickly on Rask as it is with Krejci. We might have a few more years of the whole Rask thing, the whole Rask experience, so to speak.
So if the Bruins are going to, and you make it sound like the Bruins are going to kind of keep pushing and really try to make a run at this year, they're going to need some contributions from the young kids, especially on that blue line. You know, sometimes, at least for me, it's hard to not compare and contrast the two teams in the Garden, and the Bruins and the Celtics. The Celtics needed a young contribution. They got Peyton Pritchard. He's now a fan favorite. Who has the best chance to be the Bruins' Peyton Pritchard?
Man, I mean, I guess Danica, but I mean, like, but Peyton Pritchard's not supposed to be, he's not supposed to be like a starter or like an, you know, all-star kind of player, right? That's what Stanika's upside sort of is. He has upside to be like a 30-goal scoring top six winger, maybe even like a top first line forward, all-star caliber. Like, that's his ceiling, I think. But so I don't know if that's a good enough pick. Craig Smith, to me, is a guy that I think Bruins fans are really going to like. I really like that signing. And I know he's really just going to be like a third line forward when he's at his best anyway. But I think he's exactly what they needed, which is a guy with a little bit of size who can play in the corners. He can score dirty goals. He'll score you 20 goals. He's consistent, plays hard, all that stuff. I think they needed a player like that real bad on the wing, right wing or anywhere, really. But yeah, I guess it would be one of those two guys, but I think Stanika is the guy if you want to pick like a young kid that we haven't seen much of, and that's a guy that I would pick to be the guy that we hope really pops this year and becomes, if not a fan favorite, like a legit player for them. On the defense, I've been waiting for Iiro Vaakanainen, the first round pick from 2017, I think, or 2018. I think he's still got potential, but I mean, it just shows that on defense, it usually takes a long time for these guys to develop, especially if your game is more defensive minded, which is what Vaakanainen is. But he's a good skater, and he has potential as far as just pushing the puck up ice. But I want to see what he can do defensively. And I think we will get to see some of that this year. But if you're looking at the defense in particular, that's a guy I would point out as Vaakanainen to hopefully come up and really prove himself within, if not this year, within the next couple of years.
And you mentioned that defense with Chara and Krug, you know, going elsewhere. How concerned are you with that group as they stand? And how much pressure is there on a guy like Charlie McAvoy, who's been in the system for a while and will probably have a heightened role from, you know, a leadership standpoint, in addition to what he does on the ice?
Well, they're going to take a hit on the power play, no question. They're going to take a hit offensively with Torrey Krug going elsewhere. But, you know, I've sort of been on the fence with Krug almost like basically the whole time he's been here, because he's obviously dynamic offensively. But I really think you need, if you want to go far in the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup and all that, you need more size on the back end. You need guys who can do similar things to what Torrey Krug could do, but they're also 6'2", 6'3", and they can hang with a bigger forward that's bearing down on him. And I think that was just sort of a thing that was just sort of a drawback for Krug that kept him from being one of those truly elite defensemen, because offensively he's definitely one of the best offensive defensemen in the league, one of the best power play defensemen in the league. And that's where you're going to see the Bruins take a hit. But to the other part of your question, that's where the pressure is on Charlie McAvoy, that I think if there's anyone who can, you know, make up for that loss on the power play or at least come close to it, it would be McAvoy. And it's obviously different. He's a little bit of a different kind of player. He's a right shot instead of a left shot and all that. So it's going to look different anyway on the power play. But in terms of production, Charlie McAvoy has to step up his offensive production. I think that's what's going to make the leap. That's what's going to help him make the leap to the true number one defenseman, hopefully like a Norris Trophy candidate. That's what his upside's been the whole time. So, with Chara gone now, it's McAvoy's defense now. So there is going to be pressure on him he doesn't necessarily have to be like a team leader. He needs to show a little bit of that, but he's obviously not even an alternate captain yet. So he has the veteran leadership to lean on in the forward group. But as far as the defense, he needs to be the number one guy. He needs to up his offensive production, and he needs to keep doing what he's doing defensively. And perhaps be even better at that, because I love what he's been doing at the defensive end, and I love his physicality. I love all that stuff. He seems like a smart player. I mean, he's going to be a good two-way guy, hopefully, but the key to that is the offense. And so it's going to be on McAvoy to not only be the leader of the defense, but to really pick up the slack for the loss of Krug offensively. I think that's the key to him making a big jump this year.
And then I feel like, obviously, some of the picking up the slack offensively, you're just going to look at the forwards to do more. And David Pastrnak was arguably the most effective forward in hockey, I think, last season. Tied for the league, leading goals. Is it realistic to expect that he can keep up that level of play? Like, are you expecting a similar or better season from him this year? And how important is it that he maintains that level of play if the Bruins want to compete?
Oh, Pastrnak can keep that up. He can keep that. He can create offense on his own. You know, so I'm not worried about Pastrnak at all. I'd be a little bit worried offensively about what's going to happen with Patrice Bergeron, now that I think he's 35 years old and obviously he's the captain. Good, that's great. That's obviously a long time coming. But I mean, eventually we got to start wondering like how many more years he has left of being like this elite offensive player, in addition to being one of the best two-way players in the league. And I mean, Brad Marchand, he's not old per se, but he's going to be, we're going to get to a point where Pastrnak is firmly in his prime, because he hasn't even, I don't think he's even entered his prime yet. He's only 23, 24 years old. And so we're going to get to a point where Pastrnak's in his late 20s, and what are Bergeron and Marchand going to look like at that point? So, I mean, I think Pastrnak's going to keep it up as far as the goal scorer is concerned. He's going to be a threat to score 50 goals every single year. But the question is who's going to be around him later on. I think that's the real question. But the Pastrnak is low on my list of concerns going into the season for the Bruins, even though I know he's hurt. But once he comes back, he's going to be the same player, I think, hopefully.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that with Marchand, because we're kind of talking about how this one group, right, Chara left and Rask and Krejci, and this one group might be on its way out. And you have this other young core coming in of McAvoy and Pastrnak, right? And then Brad Marchand is just kind of in the middle, right? Like he's not quite, I know we think of him with Patrice Bergeron in that group, but he is significantly enough younger to separate him. And then anyway, right. When the Bruins season, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you.
How does this Bruins season end? Where does this all come to an end?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. I don't think it ends with the Stanley Cup. I think they'll be a playoff team. I think it's gonna be a tough start, because we're gonna see growing pains with the defense, and we're not gonna have. I know Pastrnak's not available for the first month. Isn't Marchand supposed to miss the start of the season too? Or
I believe.
Or I
so,
guess
yeah.
he's close. I guess he might be ready, but still, they're gonna be without their biggest goal scoring threat for the first month or more of the season. That's going to be tough. You're going to have a defense that's in a big time transition, and we don't know if they're even going to have a real number one left shot defenseman. You know, like what we don't know what their left side of their defense is going to look like. And so it's a question mark, but I think they end up a playoff team. And what does that mean? I mean, I feel like they'll be at the low end of the playoff team seeding wise, and then maybe they could surprise people because upsets happen. And with the lower seeds in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But yeah, I think it ends with them losing in the playoffs too. I mean, I hate to say it, but I've been saying it for 3 years now, Bart. They're not big enough and they're not strong enough to hang with the most talented deep teams in the league. And I think they have plenty of skill. They got good speed, but they just don't have the size. And I'm not even talking about getting fighters I'm not even talking about grit or anything like that. Just literally physically, they're just not big enough. And this is the whole thing with Torrey Krug, and where I think they could improve is by adding size to that defense with Jeremy Lauzon and Vakanainen, Kevin Miller's back. Like they're going to be bigger on defense, and I think that could help them. But I think ultimately they might hurt at the start of the season and then have to make a run in the second half to get into the playoffs. But I think ultimately they're still not going to have enough. And I think the only way I'm proven wrong is if one – the left side of the defense pops in a way we're not expecting, like maybe Vakanainen comes out of nowhere and he's like, you know, immediately a top four guy or something like that. And Jake DeBrus takes a leap forward. Jack Stanika scores, 30 goals, 60, 70 points, whatever it is. They need young guys to come out of nowhere if they want to be at the level that they were at last year and the year before. Otherwise, I just think they're sort of a middling team, low-end playoff team, something like that, and then maybe they could win the first round, but I think ultimately they run into a more talented opponent, and that's going to be the end of the season.
All right, so you wrote the Bruins out. Who do you have winning it all?
I think I'm going to go with the Vegas Golden Knights. They've been knocking on the door, and Alex Pietrangelo was the biggest acquisition of the offseason, unless I'm forgetting someone. That was a huge pickup for them. I don't know if they lost someone that was a big name, but they're going to be loaded again. And I think Pietrangelo might be the piece that finally puts them over the top. So I will go with the Golden Knights.
All right, there you have it. Matt Dolph, 98.5 The Sports Hub, 98.5thesportshub.com. Him and Ty Anderson, all of the Bruins coverage throughout the season. I might pitch in here or there. We'll see what happens. But
shout out Ty, he's the man.
Yeah, no, Ty has been, you can check out, he's been down at training camp every day, and he's there right now, so you can check out his notebook on Twitter. And Matt, you're just at Matt Dolloff on Twitter, right?
Yep, that's it. Yep, Matt, so D-O-L-L-O-F-F.
The doll is right in there, as you said the
other
day.
Yes, doll off. It's right there, guys. It's not hard.
Matt, thank you very much for joining us.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks again, Matt. And hockey season starts on, the Bruins start on Wednesday, I think. Hockey starts Wednesday. Bruins play the first day. So there you go, and that'll be every other day. And every year I say this, we'll try to do a better job about talking hockey this year. But, I mean, like we kind of said, like with the Hub, like Matt and Ty do hockey, and then I'm kind of on Celtics and Pats and Red Sox. So that unintentionally, not that I don't love the Bruins and love hockey, but it just for me, naturally, it sometimes ends up on the back burner. But what are you going to do? All right, let's get into some football here, Lebowitz. It is the NFL playoffs. They are right around the corner, Saturday and Sunday. This gross new format where there is only one bye per conference, which means you can lock the Chiefs and the Packers into the Super Bowl. But we'll humor ourselves and talk about the rest of these games like they matter. Anyway, you got any strong thoughts on this bracket here?
Not necessarily. I think there won't be anything too unexpected that happens this weekend. The one game I'm probably looking forward to the most is Titans Ravens. And there's obviously Brown Steelers, but Titans Ravens is one that I'm interested in. I personally like the Titans team. I'm kind of rooting for them to make a run. But I also think that game is going to be entertaining and they're 3-point underdogs. I'm probably going to be putting money on Tennessee on Sunday. So
yeah, I really like the Titans. I just think that team is built super well to beat the Ravens. They've beat the Ravens, and you know, they say, well, they always beat the Ravens until they don't. I just don't think this is it. There's been five instances in NFL history where the league's leading rusher has faced the league's leading rushing team, right? Okay, so you get what I'm saying there?
In the
most
playoffs?
Rushing yards by a single, yes, in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Most rushing yards by a single player up against the most rushing yards by a team. That was the case last year with the Titans in the Ravens, and the Titans won. That's the case again. And all five times, including last year, the league's leading rusher has won the game. You cannot stop Derrick Henry. He is the running back equivalent of Rob Gronkowski. And I know people say the running back position doesn't matter, whatever. That's mostly true. Derrick Henry matters. The guy is too damn good. You can't stop him. Are they going all the way? No, they have too many other flaws. The defense is taking a step back. I don't know. They're certainly not beating Kansas City. It'll be interesting to see them against Pittsburgh or Buffalo. They're beating Baltimore. I think that's, you know, I think people are way too soft on this Titans team. All right, let's just do this. Let's just go around the bracket. You gave us a place to start. We'll go around the bracket here. Mm-hmm. This game we can talk about quickly because it's going to be a blowout. Brown Steelers. The Browns don't have their head coach. They don't have half their players. I mean, it's unfortunate. Yeah. But
and this yeah, is, this I, is, yeah, and this stinks. I mean, this is kind of, you can't do much about it. And when you have this pandemic happening and they had to deal with it a few weeks back against the Jets without their wide receiving core, essentially. And now they have to continue to deal with it. I feel bad for Cleveland Browns fans because Lord knows they've been waiting to get into the postseason for some time.
Yes, but if any fan base is ready to handle this,
of course,
it's the Browns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've dealt with plenty of heartache in their lives. So this it really is typical. It really is typical. You finally have a playoff team. You have a guy you think is the quarterback. You have a good head coach that his players like playing for, and you also beat the team that you're playing in round one the week before. But that head coach is gone. A couple other people are going to be gone, and I just don't see how a team that undermanned in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field is going to be able to pull off that upset. So yeah, I'm going with the Steelers as well on that one.
All right, moving up, Bills Colts. I think that, like, in theory, I think that there is a huge premium on veteran quarterbacks in the playoffs, right? That's how Joe Flacco beat the Patriots twice. That's how Peyton Manning sans his right arm beat the Patriots in 2015. Okay. So I think there's a huge premium on that. So I put stock in Rivers. That being said, the Colts are just too inconsistent this year. If they were a consistent team, I'd feel a lot better about picking this game close, but there's like five different Colts teams that we've seen this year. And depending on which one shows up or doesn't show up, like, you don't know. So I think the Bills are in good shape, but the Bills fans seem way too confident about this game. Like, there is certainly a realistic world where the Colts win that game.
And isn't that very typical of Buffalo Bills fans? I think this is the first year where they're actually justified in their optimism. But they've been optimistic going into every single season in my lifetime. So it's like, yeah, of course they're going to be, you know, over the top, you know, thinking that this game's a slam dunk, which would make it hilarious if they lost, which I'm almost rooting for.
Oh, I'm rooting for the Colts.
Yeah. This is another thing I hate, by the way, just a side note. I hate how so many people in Boston are now like kind of rooting for the Bills.
Oh, it's so stupid.
I hate the Bills. I hate Bills fans too. Like, I don't like either the team or the fans. So why would you want to root for them? It makes no sense.
It's a fun story. Cause sports is all about like the fun story now and rooting for the little guy, which is not the same as rooting for the underdog. Rooting for the underdog is fine. Rooting for the little guy is annoying. That's just like rooting for the little guy is basically just like, you know, when your little cousin comes over and you let him beat you at basketball because it'll make him feel good and all the adults go, oh, like that. There's no place for that in real sport. Get the hell out of here with that.
That said, I'm with you, and I think the Bills are going to win this game. Yes. They're playing so well that last stretch of the season. They're playing better football than you could argue anyone in the NFL. Josh Allen, MVP candidate, not going to win it, but still had a phenomenal year in that jump that he made. From last season, and the fact that they were right there last year and blew a 2-touchdown lead, it seems like they're a tough team and that they're on a run and they're playing well together. So that's a team, you know, forget about this week. I think they're winning this week, but that's a team that I think could make a run and could be a big challenge for the rest of the AFC.
All right, over in the NFC. I actually think there's really only one good game here. But we'll start it. We'll go from the top down here. Saints Bears in the dome. That should be a blowout.
Yeah. I mean, you can't imagine the Bears are going to even come close to winning that game. So, yeah, it's a home game for the Saints. They have Reese back. Can't imagine. And what's the deal with Kamara? And he's playing, right? So
he might. Here's the thing for me, right? There was a report from, and this kind of went under the radar because it happened right after the report that Cam Newton was leaving, was like done in New England. Mm-hmm. But Schefter reported Breeze is going to retire. This is it. Yeah. So
that's my radar.
It really kind of went, I'll try to find the exact report. Well, you give your take so I can get the right wording. But the Ray Lewis effect, I think, is in play here for the Saints in that, you know, let's gear up for his last run. So hang on, you give your take. I'll try to find that exact tweet.
Yeah, and that's a tangible, like that. It seems like an intangible thing, but when you have a guy who's, you know, obviously a future Hall of Famer, one of the best quarterbacks of his generation, who's been on that team for the vast majority of his career, you know, you're going to have guys who want to rally around him, and they have a good team, a good offense. I don't think this is the team that's making a run. I feel like the Saints are always close but no cigar. But I think that this one's going to be a slam dunk on Sunday, and I don't see the Bears coming even close. I think a 10-point spread might be a little generous for the Saints, but it's going to be at least a 1 to 2 touchdown victory for New Orleans.
Here we go. Adam Schefter. This is on ESPN's Twitter account. Most people believe this will be the final season for Drew Brees in New Orleans and the NFL, per Adam Schefter. And then there's rumors that he signed a contract with NBC to be a part of their broadcast, but mm-hmm. So maybe you get a little Ray Lewis effect there with Drew Brees. I wouldn't totally sleep on that. Seahawks, Rams. You got the Rams. They might have their starting quarterback. They might not. If he plays, he just had thumb surgery. They got to go into Seattle, play Russell Wilson, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I just have trouble seeing that game being close.
Yeah, and the Rams, you talk about the Colts being one of those teams that has five different identities. I feel like you could say the same thing about the Rams. It's kind of the NFC.
They are very much the NFC Colts.
They are, and you're going up against Russell Wilson and that Seahawks team that knows how to play when it comes to playoff time. Seahawks 3-point favorites. I might take the Seahawks there on that spread. Honestly, it's a home game, for sure. No fans, but who cares? It's still, you know, the travel definitely makes it a bit of a difference. So yeah, Seahawks are going to win that game. And I don't imagine that one to be all that close.
All right. And finally, and you know, people who know me, and I'm the guy who's 26 years old and has a Brady poster on my wall, Washington, Tampa. This is the close game. This is the 6-win Washington football team up against the greatest quarterback of all time. I am picking as the close game, and I will tell you why here. I will tell you why. You look at the teams that beat Brady in the playoffs when he was in New England, right? The 2010 Ravens, the 2015 Broncos, and I talked before about the veteran quarterback. Sure, that helps. The real issue in those games was a dominant, and when I say dominant, I mean dominant pass rush.
Yeah.
And Washington's front seven is as good as anybody in the league. Chase Young is going to be in that backfield because not only does Washington have a good pass rush, that Tampa offensive line blows. They are horrible. And the coach isn't a coach who's going to figure out, right? Remember when the Patriots faced the Chargers in 2018? That team had a very, very good pass rush. Melvin Ingram, Bosa, like they could get after you. Absolutely, they could get after you. So what did the Patriots do? They had the ball out a second and a half on every play. Bruce Arians isn't smart enough to figure that out. Well, I don't know if he's not smart enough. He might just not care. Like, it's not a game plan offense for Brady like it was in New England. They're going to try to throw the ball down the field against this pass rush. And look, I'm taking the Bucs because Brady is Brady, but I wouldn't put money on it. I'll tell you that. I really think there's a chance Washington surprises some people in this game. I really do. It's supposed to rain. I know Brady played New England, but you get out of that for a year. The rest of the roster is warm weather guys. Mike Evans might not play. They're missing key players on defense from injuries and COVID. Like, this is Washington really has a chance to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pass rush thing's a legitimate point. You do look back, and that's always been Brady's kryptonite. And he's evolved over the years. You got to give him some credit. When he's gone against, you know, pass rushes earlier in his career, like in the 2000s, it flustered him. But then he got better at dealing with the blitz. His pocket presence has continued to improve throughout his career, really. And this weekend, he's going to have to deal with another impressive pass rush. The one glaring issue here is on the offensive side of the ball for the Redskins, they have Alex Smith as their quarterback. So maybe the Bucs don't put up 40 points, but I know this is such a dumb thing to say, they're going to outscore the Washington football team. That's just how it's going
to
go.
But here's the thing. Is the defense going to be able to put up points? I think they will.
You think
the other thing, But so I would count, you know, if you force a fumble or get an interception, you give the offense a 30-yard field, right? And they score. I count that as the defense putting up points. You know what I mean? So yeah. All Alex Smith really has to do to me in this game is not turn the ball over, which is the one thing he can do. He is among the lowest turnover rate of any quarterback in the league in the last decade. He doesn't put up monster numbers, right? Here we go. Back with that term I love when talking about quarterbacks. He is a net neutral. He's not good, but he's not bad. He's definitely not bad, and he doesn't give the ball away. As long as Washington can fight possession for possession and then flip a couple, which I think they can do with that defense, they can win the game.
I think it's within the realm of possibility, but you look at this Buccaneers team and how they've played, and granted, they haven't gone up against a pass rush over the past month or so, quite like this Redskins team, but Brady, what is he, 12 touchdowns, one interception in the last four games to finish out the year. The offense is clicking. I feel like Brady and Antonio Brown have gained some chemistry throughout the season. We saw what happened last week, and I know it's the last game of the year. It's finicky. And a lot of it might come down to whether or not Mike Evans plays, so he has some options. But even though Chase Young will give him some pressure and they're going to be dealing with a lot in that defensive front and with that secondary, I just don't see it being close enough, you know, for Alex Smith to have to win it at the end of the game or anything like that. And I don't know if I trust Alex Smith to win it at the end of the game if it is a close game. I trust Tom Brady to do that. And I think that he has enough of an input on that team and, you know, on what they do from a play calling standpoint, that he'll use his insight to try to make up for the lack of football intelligence from Bruce Arians. So we'll see. I'll say this. I'm unashamed to say I'm rooting for Tom Brady and the Buccaneers to do well. I'd like to see that run.
I want to see Tom Brady do well. I want to see the Bucs lose. I want to see Bruce Arians' fault. I want Brady to get sacked 5 times because Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich couldn't figure out what a quick slant was. That's what I want to see, because it proves everything right. Everything I've been saying since last season. So yeah, that's what I'm rooting for, but we'll see. All right. That's all the games. Real quick, your Super Bowl pick.
Ooh, Super Bowl pick.
This shouldn't be a hard one.
You're going to say Packers, Chiefs, and that's probably
So I'll give you the stat here. Since the modern playoff format was put in, only 9% of the time did a team without a bye make the Super Bowl. And that used to be a little different because there were 2 byes in each conference. Now there's just 1. And you put on top of that, the Packers are the only team that really have home field advantage because of Lambeau Fields, and it's going to be snowing and cold and all of that, and that's another beast. Yeah, I'm going Packers Chiefs. I think it's a no-brainer. I'll take the Packers over the Chiefs. That game is more of a toss-up to me. The real thing that sucks is, like, this whole thing could get derailed by COVID, and that sucks. But
imagine, and I don't want to be overly pessimistic, but imagine in Super Bowl week, Patrick Mahomes, COVID.
Well, that's been the question. What would the NFL do? I think they'd cover it up.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, with that much money on the line, you kind of it seems like that would be something that they'd want to do. It'd be a risk worth taking from their perspective. But yeah, I think that obviously those are the top 2 teams. I'm not sleeping on the Bills, though. I don't want them to win, but they are playing really well. And I would love to see a shootout. I think it would be fun to see a shootout between, you know, Mahomes and Allen. That'd be great. That'd be good football. It'd be fun to see Drew Brees, if this is his last year, go up against Aaron Rodgers in the NFC Championship, and obviously Brady. But you've made points, like, obviously that team, the offensive line's not great, the defense isn't great. That said, the Bucs have been hot as of late. I'm not putting it behind them. I don't think it's as much of a lock as you do. I think absolutely the Chiefs are probably coming out of the AFC. I think the NFC, it's a little bit more up for grabs. It's a little bit more up for grabs. But obviously we have our 2 favorites, and most people are expecting it to go that way.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk some basketball real quick here. Celtics have obviously been hot after a rough start, and a huge part of that has been the emergence of Peyton Pritchard. We kind of touched on him earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool to see the Celtics have a rookie make a difference. This team in the past, they kind of get rookies, they sit them for 2 or 3 years, and they eventually ease them in. But this is, you know, I think it's super early, but based on what we've seen so far, like a legitimate rookie of the year candidate. And Peyton Pritchard, and that's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I do worry when Kemba comes back, what's his role going to be? Because that's going to be a pretty bloated position area, and getting everyone involved might be tougher than it looks. But you have to be excited. We've seen Danny Ainge hit on Brown, he's hit on Tatum. You know, Marcus Smart was a good pick, and he's had some luck in the middle of the round with guys like Rozier and whatnot. But late, post 20. You don't see him really get guys, maybe like Len Davis and people like that, but mostly those guys are non-factors, or at the very best, they end up being role players. This is somebody who Wednesday night playing against that Miami Heat team, he was on the floor in the final seconds, the final minutes of that game, and for some reason, Marcus Smart was taking the last shot, and he was there to clean up his mess. And he's somebody who... Yeah, plays unbelievable defense. I love the way he plays defensively. He's very quick. He plays with energy, and that's something you like to see. And the fact that Stevens has so much confidence in him this early on in the season, with an abbreviated preseason and training camp on top of that, this guy seems like he was ready to play, and it seems like he is the real deal. So you have to be optimistic. This Celtics bench, not very deep, and a lot of young guys, and people like Peyton Pritchard need to step up for them to really, you know, make a splash in the Eastern Conference. And again, once you get Kemba Walker back, that adds another element. And I'm curious to see if maybe there's some roster moves, if there's some trade talks, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think Ainge might do something soon, you know, given the depth at that position right now and the need for other guys.
Well, look, they have to use that trade exception, right, in the next year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the one thing about Peyton Pritchard, you touched on a little bit, the one thing about Peyton Pritchard is going to be interesting is, does he make Marcus Smart expendable? Mm. Marcus Smart only has the remainder of this year and the next year on his contract. And, you know, can you package Marcus Smart and out of Romeo Langford in that trade exception and get a guy like John Collins from Atlanta, who this morning said he's not super happy with the situation there. So, yeah, no, I absolutely think something's coming, but it's going to come down to how far the best two players take them. And
yeah,
it's so cool. You know, Jaylen Brown making another jump, Jason Tatum continuing. Somebody asked me the other day, is Jason player top 15 player in the league? Right. Somebody asked me that. Is Jason Tatum a top 15 player in the league? And I said, you might have an extra one in that number. You might not need the one in that number.
Yeah.
So they're the top two of the top three bucket getters in the league in terms of baskets made, right? Jaylen Brown is actually number one. This was going into last night, so this may have changed last night. But going into Thursday night, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were two of the top three, and then Bradley Beal's the other, who, by the way, do not sleep on being an addition to the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum tweeting the other night, he's his favorite player in the league. Marcus Smart, two first-round picks. Romeo Langford, Aaron Nesmith, the trade exception. Does that get you Bradley Beal? Maybe. The Wizards get really desperate. Maybe. And then, is that a wagon? Then you can legitimately talk about a championship. Right now for the Celtics, Tatum and Brown are elite players. They're a ton of fun. But, you know, you have to hope they continue to play at this level. You have to hope that Peyton Pritchard continues to play at this level. You need Kemba Walker and Tristan Thompson to stay healthy throughout an entire playoff run. If you get all of that, you maybe have a chance to win a title, is where I think they're at right now. If they can go out and get a guy like Bradley Beal, there's no reason they shouldn't come out of the East.
We'll see
about that.
I'd like to see Ainge, you know, work his magic. And again, I love Marcus Smart. I think he does add energy, but the problems we've seen from him throughout his career, despite being a guy who sometimes will shoot 40% from beyond the arc, he's just inconsistent. And he can be all over the place. And he has cost you games. He has helped win you games. And he's been a positive factor. But is he somebody who's really necessary on that team, especially when you bring in a guy like Peyton Pritchard who can't fill that void defensively if Marcus Smart were to leave? That's probably the guy you try to part ways with, because the contract will be easy to move. He's not making a ton of money. It's really a team-friendly deal. And they have, again, other voids that they need to fill. So I think that is coming. And I also wonder whether or not guys like Tatum or Brown maybe want to part ways with someone like Marcus Smart. We remember last year in the playoffs, there were reports of that fight in the locker room, and Brown and Smart were at the center of it. And I understand at the end of the day, these guys respect each other, but they want to win. And I'm just looking at Marcus Smart as somebody who is, you know, the clear-cut person that you would move on from if you're trying to add another piece. And they have enough young guys to package in that. You mentioned the picks. So it's going to be interesting. I think Peyton Pritchard is going to be a factor all season. And, you know, thank God you have a guy like Kemba Walker coming back, because that gives them a decent amount of flexibility on the team that does not have a ton of depth otherwise. So, you got to be optimistic. It's interesting to see how people have completely flipped in regard to their feelings of this team. And, you know, given the fact that Jaylen Brown has stepped up this season and been one of the best players in the NBA, Jason Tatum has continued to play well, there's good reason to be optimistic. So it's interesting. It's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to watch this all unfold once Kemba comes back.
All right, we're going long here. Let's wrap this up. Your final thought.
Kyrie Irving.
Said very Kemba different.
Very different people. One of them is much, much more likable than the other. Kyrie Irving did not play yesterday against the 76ers for personal reasons. Head coach Steve Nash was asked about it. And he didn't know what the personal reasons were. He hadn't talked to Kyrie Irving. Some might bring up the comments made from Kyrie Irving in the offseason, in which he mentioned that, yeah, I don't see this team having a real coach. It's going to be coached by committee. And so the fact that he's not communicating all that effectively with his head coach, future Hall of Famer Steve Nash, it's not surprising in the slightest. And I think this is a sign of more drama to come with this team. I'm always baffled with how his teammates and other players in the league and coaches and front office people had put up with this crap. And I know it comes down to him being as talented as he is, but at some point there needs to be some sort of clash with this clown so that, you know, he stops being this pretentious bum who makes everything about him. There's no one else in the league who took a personal day off yesterday. And he claims it's because of what happened at the Capitol Hill. No one else did that. Nobody else. You did. And you're a guy who has a pattern of doing weird, stupid stuff constantly. You're on a new team. The spotlight's on you. You've never taken blame for anything that you've done in your career, even though there's plenty to fault you for. And now you're taking games off because of personal reasons, a.k.a. you're soft. I hate this guy. I hate him more than any other athlete in professional sports. And, you know, I'm kind of happy that it's going this way because it validates my opinion of him in my selfish way. So we'll see how this happens, how that unfolds. But I don't know how a guy like Kevin Durant can continue to put up with a teammate like Kyrie Irving, who continues to pull this stuff. You can only have so much patience for that craziness. And I'd imagine that patience is wearing thin.
Well, we'll continue to get your victory lap on Kyrie Irving here. We're not going to do the full discussion. We did it last week.
I feel like this is every month we hit on Kyrie at least once.
It really is, and we have to. So we're just going to start having the Alex Leibowitz Kyrie minute. And that'll become part of the show. All right, two quick final thoughts for me because I had one, but this just popped up as we were recording. Patriots had two all-pro first-teamers this year. They did. And they were Gunnar Olszewski and Jake Bailey and Leibowitz. When I tell you, I screamed when I found that out. Look, I'm not surprised. Gunnar Olszewski was the best punt returner in football by like an insane margin this year. Jake Bailey was the best punter in football. By the way, shout out to Matthew Slater, who was all pro second team. But I don't know that I've hitched my wagon more to two Patriots players in the last few years than Gunnar Olszewski and Jake Bailey. So I got to take my little victory lap. And people wanted Gunnar Olszewski cut 2 years ago in training camp. Former coworker of mine said he didn't even belong in an NFL training camp for getting NFL roster. He is now a first team all pro. And Jake Bailey, who I used a fifth round pick as a punter, is now a defensive weapon. Objectively, the Patriots' best defensive player on the roster. And one more point here. Gunnar Olszewski, AP All-Pro first team. You know who's not? Patrick Mahomes.
Wow.
I'm going to let that sit.
Is AP Aaron Rodgers,
All-Pro
correct?
First teamer, Gunnar Olszewski. You cannot say the same thing in 2020 about Patrick Mahomes.
That means he's better than Patrick Mahomes. That settles it.
I'm not editorializing. I'm just going to leave it at that and let the people make the comparisons they want. My other final thought, also football related, college football playoff. We got really two bummer games, and that kind of sucked in the semifinal as much as we should have had an 18 bracket this year. And then we get Alabama and Ohio State in the final. It will certainly be interesting, and I think it's going to be a good game. I've made my thoughts clear on Ohio State. I don't think they belonged. I think playing six games and in is your rewarding preseason predictions, not actual production on the field. But then they came out and they whooped Clemson. So it's going to be interesting. I think this is the best Alabama team in a long time. I think this might be the best Alabama team Nick Saban has ever had. So going to be a hell of a game on Monday, and I'm excited for it. And Justin Fields might have a good game. I don't think he has a good enough game to convince me he should go number one overall. I've seen some people throw that out there, that he beat Trevor Lawrence, and now all of a sudden you look at him as being the top pick in the draft. I'm not ready to go that far, but I did like what I saw from him in the semifinals. So that's my final thoughts. We'll wrap this up here. We'll have another show for you next week. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at CallNetPodcast. Check us out online at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. Until the next one, For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth, and I thank you to Matt Dollar from 98.5 The Sports Hub for joining us earlier. We hope you enjoyed this one, and we'll see you on the next one.